My name is Tom. You're listening to the Quarter to Three Movie Podcast, where this week we're going to be talking about Animal Kingdom, which is an Australian movie, which is why we're all talking this way, right? Right, guys?
Right.
I'm joined by Christian Mirasky. Christian Mirasky, hello.
Seriously, you have to stop calling me that. It gives me the creeps.
Also, Kelly Warren. Kelly, let's hear your Australian accent. Go.
Crikey.
Well, I didn't realize there was going to be math.
It's also his tagline, by the way.
Is that your tagline this week, Kelly Warren, for Animal Kingdom? No. Okay, well.
Tagline's not as good as that.
It's crikey. Okay, let's hear what you got.
This is my Australian accent, by the way.
It's nice. Good. Because a lot of Australians sound American, like Paul Walker. Famous Australian, but you never know from the way he talks. So.
That's Paul Hogan.
Oh, that's my confusion.
That blonde guy you like, who's from all the movies you like.
Good call.
So Kelly, stop doing it.
What? I can't. Good Lord, I couldn't.
It hurts, doesn't it? I don't know how they do that.
How do they do that?
They choose to do that.
I think it's some sort of evolution. It's like having gills or something. They've just evolved that way.
Where
they,
spoiler.
Yeah. So, Kelly Wand, what is the Animal Kingdom flavored tagline for this week?
All animals are equal, but some are more equal than others.
Okay, that's Animal Farm. What is your Animal Kingdom tagline? Well done, Kelly Wand. I like that.
What keeps horses from betting on people?
Kelly Wand, can you give us... Now, should we just jump straight to the synopsis? Because I kind of want people who maybe... Do people accidentally hit play and then start listening and then realize, oh, I haven't seen the movie, I'm going to stop listening? Because if so... I want to tell them that I recommend this movie. I kind of want to say things about this movie that will get people to see it before we spoil it. But that would screw up our format, though, so I don't know how to proceed.
Well, no one's listening.
So. Good point. So those of you who aren't listening, hopefully you will have, for some reason, made the decision to see Animal Kingdom. But I'm kind of tipping my hand there. So before we get to you guys, Kelly Wand, why don't you just give us a synopsis? What transpires over the course of Animal Kingdom?
Oh, you mean an animanopsis?
Okay, go with that.
This was another challenging one.
I can't wait to hear it.
And by challenging, I mean lame. Like the Winter's Bone one. Anyway, here comes my animanopsis, Tom and Dingus. So this kid named Jay is watching Deal or No Deal with his mom. And it's a really good episode because she ODs and dies on the couch beside him, but he's still... transfixed. Get it? So he calls his grandma Smurf, which I don't remember her being called in the movie. We'll get into that. So for therapy, she invites him to come live with a bunch of his unstable drug dealer criminal uncles and her. So he moves in, and they give him driving lessons, and he meets this nice girl who's drawn to his lovable family members. And how he never says anything. So she hangs out in his bedroom a lot and sweetly awaits a tragic fate. Then the cops use the old say he's got a gun without planning a gun trick on the nicest dick brother when he goes to the drugstore to give the dick brother that the cops are really looking for some dirty money at the drugstore. So the dick can walk away scot-free and declare war on the police. So some cops get shot, so they shoot the Australian Sean Penn coked-out brother. And then this cop guy, Pierce, I don't know the actor's name, sorry, he starts pestering Jay everywhere he goes instead of just shooting the remaining brothers and the mom. That way more people will die. And their case will end in a mistrial. So instead of keeping his girlfriend close, Jay lets her go back to his place where the dick brother interrogates her about what she's told the cops. And when he finds out it's nothing, he kills her and leaves the body in a subway. But the coroner's report and the bloody needle and the dick brother's failed polygraph test aren't enough to keep him in jail. But the dick still tries to kill Jay for ratting them out, even though he didn't, and for being bummed they killed his woman. Which he is. So the cops put him in the best witness protection program ever. but his grandma sets up a raid on the place by blackmailing the mayor or something. I assume it's the mayor because he has mayor hair, the guy that had Jaws. So then Grandma, wait, I already did that. But Jay's security team aren't cops, so they give up. But Jay runs away because they didn't surround the house. So Guy Pierce promises Jay everything will be okay because he's weak and young. But then the Dick brothers acquitted thanks to Jay's testimony of dead silence. But he had a backup plan all along, which was to have a gun stashed somewhere in his mattress before all this went down to kill the Dick with. Then he hugs the grandma who caused it all, while the Fredo brother holds his wiener back. The end.
All right, well done, Kelly Wand.
You can stop listening now. I mean, start. Torture.
That was a tough one to do. Okay, by the way, you say he was a coked-out Australian Sean Penn. That brother, to me, seemed more like a coked-out Australian Russell Crowe.
Yeah, that was my joke, you jerk.
Uh-huh.
There's no such thing as an Australian Russell Crowe.
Hey. That's true. I don't know who could mistake him for that. Yeah,
he looks nothing like the Falcon and the Snowman Sean Penn guy, but he reminded me of that guy in that he was the loose cannon brother.
Okay, sure.
That's all I meant by that.
But he looked more like Russell Crowe to me, like an Australian.
Russell Crowe got fat and Robin Hoodie.
Right, exactly, yes. All right, so well done.
Let's get on to the intellectual part of the show.
Well, before we get too intellectual, I want to talk a bit about the background of this movie, because I think a lot of people listening have never heard of it. Of course, they're not listening because they haven't seen it. And if they haven't seen it, they're not going to listen, and they're not going to listen anyway because they haven't seen it. But let's talk a little bit about where Animal Kingdom comes from. This won the 2010 World, basically like the International World Cinema Prize at Sundance.
The World Jury Prize.
Right, exactly. Not the audience. So the audience votes on one, and then there's a jury, and the jury got the prize. This got the World Cinema Prize from the jury. What Dingus said, yeah.
But you don't see the trial, just like in the movie.
Correct. Yeah, I don't think
jury vote.
I think what happens in the movie, Kelly Wand, doesn't it happen before the trial?
The whole movie?
No. The plot, like, we don't see the trial because all this, everything in the movie, yeah, actually happens before
everything
the trial.
Up till the interview where they're sitting.
The trial takes place, we just don't see it.
Right. Which a guy was bitching about. The New York Times reviewer was going,
You know what, that makes sense, because there's all those shots of them escorting him to the courthouse, and they're not going to do that if that's just like preliminary hearings or whatever. So
that's one of my favorite elements of this, one of those things that you don't see that's just freaking fantastic. And
yeah.
We'll get into that. But right. That's great.
But so the fellows who did this, the director's a guy named David Michaud. I don't know if I'm saying his name correctly. And he comes from this, and the reason I wanted to see this is he comes from this loose collaboration of Australian filmmakers who work under the name Blue Tongue Films. And Blue Tongue is not an entity in and of itself. They're not their own studio or anything. They're basically almost like a breakfast club or something. They're a bunch of guys that sort of work with each other, and they work on different projects. It's more like a sort of a support group, professional support group, you could say. And another movie that came from Blue Tongue 2 years ago is a movie called The Square, which was directed by the brother of one of the actors in Animal Kingdom. Blue Tongue also has some notable shorts online that you can watch. I would recommend one called I Love Sarah Jane, which was written by David Michaud, who wrote and directed Animal Kingdom. There's also a fantastic one called Spider, which I think was written by directed by one of the Edgerton brothers. So anyway, this was what was exciting to me about going to see Animal Kingdom, is it's these really smart, clever guys who work in the business in Australia, and Animal Kingdom is the latest from them. So there we go. That's the background of what you're getting. Dingus, why don't you tell us a bit, how would you describe this film, aside from the synopsis that Kelly gave us, how would you sell this to someone?
It's a movie about talking animals. That's what I would say.
It's no Fantastic Mr. Fox. I'll grant you that.
No, but the themes are similar, I would say.
I would call it At Close Range, set in Melbourne.
Yeah, that's more where I was thinking. I don't What's your Fantastic Mr. Fox? Well, we'll hear about that in a minute. So Dingus, sell this to someone. How are you going to tell someone that they should see Animal Kingdom? Assuming you feel that, by the way. I might be reading too much. I might be assuming too much.
You might be. What if I didn't like this film at all?
It's a good point. How would you dissuade them from seeing it in that case?
Well, this might work either way, depending on which of my friends you talk to. But the way I would sell it or dissuade them would be by saying it's one of the best films I've seen this year. And so some of my friends would say, oh, I've got to go see that. And others would say, all right, I don't need to see that one.
Well, you need new friends if you got friends that would say that. That's a terrible thing to say.
It's a terrible thing.
Gotcha.
Dingus, what made it one of the best films you've seen this year? That's pretty high praise.
I agree with that.
Because it's the same year as Inception. I don't know if you realize.
And Piranha.
Also Toy Story 3.
What makes you say that, Dingus?
I think across the board, it's just fantastically done. It's some of my favorite writing that I've seen all year. And from the moment it begins, from the opening credit sequence, and I didn't know what to expect because, as usual, I don't go into this film knowing anything about it other than its title, and that a couple friends have recommended it, and I've heard it crop up in various interviews that I've had to immediately turn off, podcasts that start talking about it that I have to turn off immediately. And I got tired of doing that, so I was very much feeling, I really want to see this now because I'm tired of turning off the things I listen to and walking out of conversations.
And hold that thought real quick, Dingus, because one of the things that has been so surprising to me is, first of all, the trailer really does give away important plot points. But not only that, we all noticed this. The frickin' critics quote on the dang movie poster is a huge spoiler. I think people talking about this movie to an audience that hasn't seen it yet need to be a lot more careful, dadgummit. That's so annoying.
That's a marketing thing, too, so we can't blame.
But I just think that the spoiler that they give away about Jackie Weaver's character is just so – it just really damages the experience of enjoying the movie, I think. So Dingus, you've been hearing people talk about it. You wanted to avoid that, so you went in blind and take it from there. Go ahead.
Well, just to go right back at you with this, though, because how do I adequately answer the question you asked to me? I mean, this is sort of a marketing question.
Right.
How do I adequately sell this movie without giving it away?
Mm-hmm.
Other than saying to people who trust me and who I trust, this is one of the best films I've seen in a long time. You got to see it. And please go see it when it's in a theater, because you have to see movies like this in theaters. I mean, how do you say beyond that to a wider audience? How do the marketing people solve this? Because I respect what you're saying. When we looked at the poster and we saw that quote about Jackie
Weaver.
Thank you, Jackie Weaver. We all three of us were just saying, whoa, no, don't say that.
Right.
Because that's just one of those lovely discoveries, and it's a discovery that unfolds. It's something that unfolds, and you want those types of things to happen to people. But how do you sell a film to somebody without giving it away?
I think, first of all, you take that frickin' quote off of the poster. There's no reason it is marketing in a sense, but I don't think reading that quote is a necessary part of the marketing. And just so we're assuming at this point you've seen it. I mean, that's the way we do the podcast. So in case you haven't seen the poster, you're listening to us at this point, you've obviously seen the movie. What the critics quote gives away is that Jackie Weaver plays...
What are you doing?
You're
legitimizing the poster issue, then.
You just gave away the whole plot of the movie.
No one listens to me.
Everybody listening at this point, I'm assuming, has seen the movie. I mean, people know our shtick. We're talking about, this podcast is from the perspective of people who've seen the movie. So I think it's fair to let people who've seen the movie, if you're listening at this point, I'm assuming you've seen it. Do you really think I shouldn't say anything, Kelly Wand? It's just what's...
No, I know. It's just weird.
So the poster gives away that Jackie Weaver plays, they might even call her a crime boss. I forget exactly what they said. But it's something that you don't know, that this grandmother character, she's literally a grandmother, becomes a sort of a villain, a criminal villain. And the poster quote gives that away. A big part of the appeal of this movie is her performance, but I feel that it's really a lousy thing to do to reveal her place in the end of the movie when you're talking about her performance. So let's go back. So Dingus, you've said it's one of the best things you've seen this year. I still want to know what makes it one of the best things you've seen this year. You mentioned the writing.
Did we lose Dingus?
No, I'm still here.
He's laughing at you. Stupid question. You like the writing?
No, it's, you can still hear me, right?
Yes, we do hear you.
Yeah, we just can't believe you're that quiet.
All right. One of the things I love about this film is how it starts, how it has such silence and how it has such quiet violence. And that's the wrong way to put it. The violence erupts and you don't see it. And there's so many things you don't see in this
film. Sometimes you do, though.
Sometimes you do. That's absolutely
true.
That's
how it messes with you. Pacing's always messing with you in this movie.
But this doesn't make any sense to say this, but one of my favorite things about this film is it's one of my favorite films about things you don't see, including how the main character works. But there are things you don't see in this film that make the experience so much more tense and emotional for me. And I just think it's an incredible portrait of a family and how a family works and how trust works within a family and doesn't work within a family. And that's one of the things I'm so happy Tom got me to see The Square this week, because these themes of trust and who trusts and who does not trust in a film that should be about trust is just a fascinating theme for me. Mm-hmm. And watching how that unfolds in this film, how trust unfolds and how characters use trust and how silence is used in this film and the things you don't see. Again, these are the things that appeal to me as a film goer, the way character is developed in such a profound way. And this is a lousy way, if we're talking about your original question to me, to sell a film to somebody. So why should I see this film? Because of the things you don't see is not really the answer.
Kelly Wan, can you take a stab at this? I'm assuming, Kelly Wan, that you also enjoyed it, that you would recommend this. If you would recommend this to someone, how would you present it to them?
It's one of the most sick-making movies I've ever seen. And just in that, like Dinga said, it's not so much, it's a lot hinges on what you don't see, but my stomach does it not very easily these days. It's mm-hmm. usually pretty jaded, and my stomach was in knots for like the whole last hour of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the things it leaves out are key to its themes. In fact, I would have left out that voiceover at the beginning because I like the idea of not knowing what the main character's thinking is a big part of the movie.
Yes, absolutely.
I thought that was the one thing I would have changed about it. But the fact that you don't see the trial at all, I thought worked perfectly with the themes, which is a trial is this human fabrication, like animals don't have trials.
Nice.
So it kind of, and I don't read much crime fiction, so when I do, except for like Patricia Highsmith, like that she could read the Ripley books, I like her. But when I do, it's really exotic to me because I'm less familiar with the genre. So when I do, I'm always like more surprised than crime fiction aficionado.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Kelly, you just gave a great poster quote to plug in instead of that Jackie Weaver quote. My stomach was in knots for the whole last hour.
Yeah.
Well, I want to address a little bit of that, because Kelly, I think that's a huge part of what makes it work and why your stomach is in knots, because this movie is so effective at making you care about the characters. It's such a character-driven drama. And it is such a classic example, I think, of what makes drama work. And that is, namely, vivid characters and exploring the themes of what connects them and what makes them... Dingus, you say this movie is about trust, and I agree that's part of it, but any relationship is about trust. I think the more trenchant actions in this movie are betrayal. I think that this movie, to me, feels very, very Shakespearean in the sense that it's about the betrayal amongst a group of people who are connected to each other. And that right there is the stuff of drama. When the people you should trust betray you, and there's no, you know, Shakespeare's histories would explore dynasties and lineages of kings and whatnot. But this is a much more intimate, it's strictly a small-time family version of that. And it reminds me a little bit of the beginning of Akira Kurosawa did a movie called High and Low about a kidnapping. And it opens with a bunch of guys, I think they own shoe stores, and they're sitting there talking about how to sell shoes. And it has the sense of of a Shakespearean drama about kings, and these guys running their shoe stores. It just feels every bit as dignified, and the subject matter is every bit as important to them, and it feels, you know, the drama is real. It feels Shakespearean, and I felt the same way about these small-time hoods who made a living robbing banks. And they were a family, you know, they were all brothers and their mother was there. And it just felt as Shakespearean to me as the shoe salesman in High and Low, the Kurosawa movie. So that's how I would sell it. I would say this is the stuff of classic drama. And I agree with you, Dingus. It's all in the writing. Like so much of it's in the writing and the performances. They do such a good job of honoring,
and the music
subject. Yeah. The music is fantastic.
Man, your description, Tom, talking about High and Low and the way you couched all of that makes me think of Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
Mm. Yes, exactly. There's an Abel Ferrara thing with Chris Penn. I can't remember who else is in it. About brothers at is it called The Funeral, maybe? Is that ringing a bell?
Yeah, I think you're right.
I was thinking of that as well, but you're right, Dingus. It's very Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, where that movie ends up, I don't think this is a huge spoiler, but so much of that movie ends up being about family dynamics, and the way they unfold and the way they drive characters' motivations over the course of the events.
Something else something that you're talking about. Like the main antagonist brother is kind of the smallest one physically, but he's the one nobody fucks with. Because that's another movie's themes, like the strength being a subtle quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, the main character, he's actually the biggest, but he's the youngest, so he's the one who's kind of getting steered around.
Let's talk about those family dynamics. Yeah, so go ahead. I cut you off a second time, Callie Wand.
No, go ahead. I'm just repeating what you said, I guess.
Well, you brought up, the dynamics of this family, these characters aren't stereotypical. Mm-hmm. The actors that inhabit them and the writing that is done for them, you made a joke, Callie Wand, about one of them being the Fredo character. And that was cute, but it's nothing like that. You cannot apply your normal crime drama tropes to these people, I think. Even the sort of the coked out paranoid one, you figure he's going to be the one that breaks it all down and that gets them all busted, and he's not. And even, you know, there's one character who is talked about a lot before he shows up, and I remember when he shows up thinking, oh, really?
That's him?
That's
right.
Him? But yeah. Then, as he's there, thinking, oh, that is him. And mm-hmm. and
how they all react to him. And you know these guys are badasses.
Exactly. Like, how they react to him and how he lives up to that. I mean, the actor's name is Ben Mendelsohn, and the character is Pope. That performance was every bit as compelling as Jackie Weaver as the grandmother, I thought. That guy was just phenomenal. And that's partly because the other actors laid groundwork for him, but it's partly he's just doing some amazing stuff there.
Yeah. With like Dingus was saying, like silences and just looks.
Yep. And the thing is, David Michaud knows, it's a very well perceptively shot movie. You know, he knows what to show us and when to show us and when the camera's looking at whom. There's just some great work done there.
We saw this movie together. It's the second one we've seen together since the podcast started. The other one being a delightful Sam Worthington romp.
Both the second one we've all three seen together. You guys also saw Scott Pilgrim, the two of you.
Right.
So that doesn't count. You have to be there.
Yeah, I think you couldn't be bothered to join us. Thanks.
That's
Nice work, Mr. Family. My question is, was I the only one who had no idea where this movie was going for most of the entire movie, which was awesome. Like, I had no idea what was going to happen next.
That's its strength. I mean, I think part of what makes this movie work is that the lead character is, and you could be complimentary and say he's a cipher, but it's almost like he's kind of inert. He's not very expressive, and
That's his character, though.
That's his character.
Nerd is a great way to put it, because somewhere in my notes I put zombie-like.
And yes.
So is Michael Corleone in Godfather 2.
No, Al Pacino does this great, slow burn thing. I mean, you can see gears turning when the camera's close on Al Pacino. When the camera's close on this fella, the actor's name is James Freshville, there is nothing. I mean, he is... The kid is blank. But see, I don't know that it's a – well, let's talk about that.
I like that, and I think it's necessary.
Oh, I agree. I agree. And that, I think, is what makes the – I mean, I think the point of the movie is his decision, is what he decides to do and how he fills this – how he resolves – I think the central dramatic tension in this family is what happens when the controlling figure, basically the sort of the male lion, is taken out of the equation.
Right.
And when that happens, not only is it a shock to the family, but I think it's a shock to the audience as well. So we very much are put in that same, wait a minute, you can't kill that character. You know, he's the charismatic, reasonable guy, and he's supposed to be the sort of the emotional anchor for the movie as we go along. You know, he's the expressive one, because we're certainly not getting that from the protagonist. So when you take him out of the movie, not only does it manipulate the characters, I feel like it manipulates the audience. And Joel Edgerton is a very well-known Australian actor, and I think a lot of people who see this movie we'll find it just as shocking that Joel Edgerton dies as quickly as he does.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, when that happens, it's also the way's movie of telling you, you know, the normal rules aren't in effect here and you're on notice.
Yeah. In hindsight though, you go, oh, they had a goodbye scene for him, so I should have seen it.
Because
the movie's paced so weird up to that point. You go, it's a goodbye scene. This movie doesn't know what the hell it's doing. I think you're still...
When his wife says, get the milk, I knew, goodbye.
Really?
Yeah. As soon as she calls after him, get the milk, I just knew, crap. And I love that guy. I loved him.
Yeah. Dingus, you're much smarter than me and Kelly Wand, though, Dingus.
That's not true. He's the anchor. He's the father. And the mother, who is the grandmother, is so odd. But he's this feeling of I feel like I could sit down and talk to this guy, and I feel like he could talk reasonably to anybody in the family, and he's going to make the family work. And when he walks out and she says, get the milk, I'm like, crap. But listen to this guy, and he's such a great – I hadn't seen anything else with him in it before this, but I had, you see him on screen, and you're just like, oh, just keep this guy on screen. But I that's not really fair, because I kept feeling that with these actors. These actors are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I kept feeling like, keep this guy around, keep that guy around. You know, even when Pope was on, as weird as that guy was as a character, I just loved these actors. They were so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
His other telegraph is, I'm thinking of getting out of the business because it's too hard or something.
Yeah, you're right, Kelly Wan. That is pretty much. I don't know about Dingus' preternatural insights into get the milk, but
if he thinks every time Wendy tells him to get the milk,
you're never going to see me again, honey. Yeah.
But you're definitely right. This idea that I'm thinking of getting out of the business—that's generally the kiss of death for any character in a crime movie.
Too old for this shit.
Dingus, what did you think of putting this sort of inert, as you say, zombie-like character in the lead role? How did that work for you?
Well, you know, for me, where a lot of times, you know, Kelly Wan said something earlier about not being comfortable with the voiceover or wishing that it hadn't been there because he likes knowing even less about the character. Yeah. And in this one case, well, often I will think that voiceover is a crutch. In this case, I kind of felt okay about it because he is so blank. As I watched it, I started to think, are we supposed to be thinking that this guy has some sort of a social disability?
Right.
Does he have Asperger's? Is he on the autism spectrum? What is his deal emotionally? He just seems to show nothing.
Yep.
And then he has that amazing scene in the bathroom at
Yes.
Nikki's house, mm-hmm. where he just dissolves. And you realize, you flash back to the moment that Kelly talked about in his synopsis, where he's on the couch with his mother. And you realize, you sort of spool backward in this incredible, amazing, this sort of Brian De Palma kind of shot of you just spooling backward and seeing what his life must have been like with his mom and how he became emotionally inert. And then watching him develop over the course of this film, and watching him lay the groundwork for his decision outside of the courtroom for the end, it's fascinating, because you've got a guy who is, you know, a nerd or zombie-like or whatever, and yet in that moment when he
pulls the gun on the guy in the road rage incident, you see things going on in him, and he's not doing anything. It's just one of those instances where an actor, all he has to do is feel it, and you know what he's feeling. And even when you don't, you're willing to go along with it.
I had a problem with that scene, too, actually.
With the gun scene?
I just didn't understand what the cop's motivation was for him.
I think Dingus is talking about when his cousin has him pull a gun at the road rage incident.
Oh, no, that's a great scene.
Yeah.
Right, when Craig says, show him who's king, and he steps out of the car and points the gun, and you see so much going on in him. And he's not showing anything.
He is a little bit, and I think that's an important bit of groundwork that gets laid. And Kelly Wan, you mentioned not liking the voiceover, and I agree with your reservations, but there's an important takeaway from the voiceover, and that's where he's talking about his – and now let me get this straight. They're cousins, right?
Who?
All of those guys are his cousins. His mother –
No. They're his uncles.
His uncles. Right. His mother's brothers, right.
That's what he says to Darren. He calls his uncle Darren, and Darren says, stop calling me uncles. Give me
right,
Craig.
Exactly.
Because they're so close in age.
Right. An important part of the voiceover is him talking about Darren and how much he likes Darren. And, you know, there's a part in the voiceover where he says he had a way better BMX than me, you know. and that's an important – that, I think, is an important detail for the decision he ultimately makes to protect Darren, you know, the same thing that he and his grandmother, Janine, have the same goal in mind, is the family has fallen apart. Pope is going to end up destroying them. He's the problem there. Oddly enough, and that's why at first I thought it was a weird ending, him embracing Jackie and then blackout. But they have the same objective, and that's to salvage whatever's left of the family and to protect Darren. Because that's something you find out that he can't really emote or express into the other point in the movie, that he does really care about Darren, that he likes Darren.
And she does, most.
Yeah.
He's her favorite.
Is he gay?
I'm just asking.
I'm just asking. I mean, he can tell me.
Yeah, let's just talk about it. I want you guys to talk about that with me. You can talk to me.
In the Matt Reeves remake, it's like he drinks.
Nice.
I did two jokes there. That makes sense. But why does the cop draw on Jay in the car?
Like, I just thought that was – I loved that moment, Kelly Wand, because, it's just the unease of having to sit there face-to-face with the police, how the police don't understand the stuff that he's going through and how isolated he is, even from the people trying to protect him.
I get it from his point of view. I don't understand why the cop would do it.
He's being a dick, I thought. I mean
– All right. So it's the worst cops ever because they're incompetent throughout the whole movie.
Do you really think they're incompetent? I mean, well, yeah, I guess there is a lot.
Yeah,
it's just kind of an indictment of the Melbourne Police Department, I imagine.
This is also lifted from a specific time period as far as what they were going through then with these robberies. I mean, they really had said, as happens at this point, we're done. We're just going to start killing them because there's nothing we can do. And
a sense of frustration and powerlessness. And what kind of jerk move can you do when you're frustrated and powerless, but, you know, pull your gun and just literally brandish it in someone's face? I mean, they're reduced to that, it seemed.
But wouldn't the other cops in the car with them react to that? Because they don't. I mean,
I don't know. So you would cut that scene?
I like it for the reasons you said, but every character needs motivation for me in a movie, right? I get freaked.
Well, what about Kelly Wand, where Guy Pearce's partner wakes him up while he's sleeping, where Jay is sleeping on the bed and wakes him up and has his gun very deliberately placed right next to Jay's face on the table and is goading him? I mean, I think that lays groundwork. I mean, we've seen that before with Guy Pearce's partner. Do you know that scene that I'm talking about?
Yeah, but it's one thing if they're just bullies and they're messing with, like, he's not necessarily being observed, but in a car on the way to the trial. You can't draw your gun then, or your partners will freak out.
Actually, I think that is okay in Australia. They say that they encourage their police to do that, I believe.
Sorry, I couldn't understand because your accent was so thick.
what I loved about that scene, that other scene you're talking about with Leckie, is it Leckie? Guy Pierce's partner, is when Guy Pierce comes into the hotel or motel room, he knows what's happened. And he takes Jay out to talk to him. And there's a couple of scenes. There's a couple of moments where I think Guy Pearce is so lovably naive as a character in this, and yet so earnest and helpful and intelligent in other ways. And it would be interesting, although not as interesting, to see the movie from his point of view. But I think we've seen that movie before. You know, him sitting there playing with his daughter, who clearly has a disability. And in one of my favorite little moments of business, when the wife slides the phone and he misses it. And he's just this character who seems so earnest and has such good intentions, yeah. And is yet so impotent in so many ways.
He says the right things, but his results are...
Well, he says the right things, but he doesn't see what's actually going on. And Jay does, with as inscrutable as Jay seems to be, Jay picks up everything.
Yeah. Huh. Kelly Wan, did you have any problem with this female lawyer randomly appearing in the museum? That's the one that threw me. Were you okay with that?
Well, was it a random appearance? I mean, it was an appointment, I thought.
This woman just shows up and starts talking to him, and I was like, wait a minute, who is that? What is she doing?
They knew she was coming.
I didn't. No one let me know.
That freaked me out a little bit, because it had the flavor of, we got a bit part, and we're going to give this girl a line. But then she starts talking, and you realize, oh, she's the one who's going to be questioning him, and she's so good.
Right.
In that moment, when she's coaching him, which I think takes place during the trial, and there's this great sort of weird time thing that goes on that is in that scene of the coaching, you know, where she says, this is me talking to you now.
Right.
Yeah.
I loved her. And at first I was very much like Tom was. I was just like, where did you come from?
I think I was a little thrown because I thought the cops were coaching him and Jay was the cops' star witness. And now suddenly he's.
Well, because he's making deals.
Yeah, he's with the family's lawyer at that point, who, by the way, another completely atypical bit of casting, which I really liked. In the museum, he's with the family's lawyer and with Jackie. And that's when the woman sidles up.
Wait, what's the casting thing you're going to say? Or was that it?
The one who played, I forget his name, Eddie, I forget what his name was, the family's lawyer, that guy.
Wait, so you said, oh, this great bit of casting, and then you don't mention the casting?
No, the guy who plays the lawyer. I thought that he was lawyer.
Okay. Doesn't he have the flak vest on later? Or am I crazy? I imagine a lot of things.
Well, you see him like changing out of his suit. It's clear that he's not the kind of lawyer who ever wants to wear a suit.
But isn't he part of the raid? Or am I completely hallucinating?
I think you're
completely hallucinating.
Awesome. Yeah. So like everybody. Okay. Thank you.
Do you remember the family lawyer? He's the sort of the oily guy, but he's
the one she blackmails.
No, that's the family police stooge that they have in their pocket. That's Kelly. Did you sleep through the end?
So that guy was on the raid. So I'm not hallucinating that. I'm hallucinating who the lawyer.
Yeah, the guy in the fish store is the policeman who's on the tape.
Oh, right. Okay.
The one to whom Janine says, "And you've done some awful things, sweetie." All right, so let's talk about her.
So many good lines in this movie.
There really were. There really
were. A movie that values and understands silence. It's really awesome. I agree with Dingus. Like, the writing's great. Like, the guy can write great dialogue, but sometimes it's better without it.
Yeah. Well, for instance, the scene where Guy Pearce comes to the house to pick up Jay, and where Jackie Weaver basically just fixes Guy Pearce with her gaze.
Oh.
That I was so blown away by that. I mean, just thinking of that gives me chills. That woman was just so amazing in that part. Mm-hmm. And you know, even later when she does something similar in the grocery store. And he just says, you know, if
you're gloating.
I mean, she's just and
his speech is a red herring.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's yeah. Exactly.
He gives a great speech that winds up being meaningless. Yeah. I love that.
He also has to the unenviable bit. I wouldn't say this is weak writing, but I don't feel we needed it. And that's Guy Pearce's speech about how there's big trees and little bugs in the woods, and you have to find a place. I mean, that I was so worried he was actually going to use the title of the film at that point.
But it's incredible, and I don't often do this, but it's incredible how much of that is in trailers. How much of his speech about, you think you're strong, but you're actually weak. You've been protected by the strong ones, and now they're weak. You know, you have to find a place for yourself in the world, which is actually a line from the film and not from the trailer. But there's a lot of that little bit in the trailer.
Yeah.
Why are you going to watch the trailer?
Well, I just watched it a little bit ago because I don't usually, but I wanted to just hear the accent again, and I wanted to hear what they were saying.
I can, if you want to hear the accent again, Dingus, I can do it for you. Just let
me. Yeah, we have Tom. You need to do
I don't know why you have the trailer.
I'll just go to the beginning of this podcast and wonder how often, how much you had to rehearse that. That was awesome.
I did. Actually Tom's Eskimo accent.
Here's the line.
That moment you mentioned when Guy Pearce comes to the door and they talk to her, and through the course of that scene, the way her eyes work on him, I couldn't stop looking at her, and I just got chills. I mean, that is amazing. She's amazing. And the way she looks at him in that, and then later in the grocery store scene, fantastic.
Yeah, with that same creepy smile.
Did she remind you guys at all of Mirab from Winter's Bone?
Will you stop taking every... God damn it.
I stole Dingus's point. Now, without giving anything away...
I thought she was the Australian Russell Crowe.
It didn't work. If you haven't seen Winter's Bone, that's another movie we saw this year that we loved. And I think...
It's similar, too.
And they're very similar. And I just think, without giving anything away about Winter's Bone, some of the family dynamics so apply to Winter's Bone. Winter's Bone is another movie that addresses a lot of what this movie does about, you know, family dynamics and trust. And it's more about a community. But I just thinking of her, it features a similar... female sort of matriarchal character named Mirab, who we all loved. So if you liked Animal Kingdom, we recommend Winter's Bone as well.
And vice versa.
Exactly.
The actor playing Mirab was, what was it, Dale Dickey? Is that who you said last night?
Yep. Dale Dickey. What did you guys think of Guy Pearce's mustache? Because I'm thinking of growing one.
It was, well, you grow a pretty good beard. John Hawks.
That mustache was quite an accomplishment, I thought.
It was an important part of the character.
I agree.
And it was, I mean, Dingus saying this is a period piece, which I was too dumb to realize.
I don't know that it's not a period piece.
No, it's just that the whole...
Dingus talked about a crime wave that really happened, I thought you said something like that.
Yeah, but it's. I think the germ of the story is based on this moment that was happening, where there was so much bank robbery going on, and this squad said, okay, we're just declaring war and that's it. And I think that's where the writer got the idea and then wrote from there. It's not necessarily a period piece. I don't mean that.
But it's fixed at a very definite time in the dynamics between the police department and this crime family. Is what you're saying.
Well, it's inspired by that.
Okay, right.
Hmm. So it's like an Alan Rudolph movie.
What the? It's the most random thing you've ever said.
Really?
It's in the top three.
So is this this guy's first movie, David Michaud? Because I look forward to his next work nervously.
It might be his first feature film. It's funny, the shorts that you can watch, if you go to bluetongue.com, it might be bluetonguefilms.com. Just Google Bluetongue Films. On their website, you can watch their shorts, and they're also all on YouTube. David Michaud wrote and directed one of them called Crossbow. Crossbow is, I think, maybe 14 minutes. And you can see a lot of the seeds of Animal Kingdom in Crossbow. Crossbow is also maybe about Jay at a younger age, you might say.
Mm.
So I would recommend going to see one of David Michaud's shorts. He also wrote something that I want Dingus to talk about called I Love Sarah Jane. You can go to YouTube. Kelly Wand, by the way, I don't know if you've done your homework. Have you seen any of these shorts we're talking about?
No, but I finished the game Crossbow in the arcade.
Okay. Kelly Wand, have you seen The Square?
No, but I saw The Triangle.
All right. Dingus, tell us a bit about I Love Sarah Jane. Why don't you?
And Cube.
Well, you know, Tom has been trying to get me to watch this. It's a 14-minute short, which, you know, the thing is, if you're going to click on a YouTube thing, it's 2 or 3 minutes or you're not going to watch it. And so it was this short, and it was suggested by another friend of ours named Troy. And I didn't know. Come on. And so finally, no, not Troy Goodfellow. Troy Charles is his name. Troy Vincent, whatever. Anyway,
I
didn't want to do it. And so I finally watched it the other night because Tom had berated me so much. for good reason, actually. And in the first couple moments of this short is this little
I think it's real quick. I would say, if you can, try not to spoilerize this, because I think we're turning people onto it who might not know about it.
I haven't seen it, you jerks.
Well, was an actor I was really excited to see.
Oh, I didn't mean that. Okay. Actually, I leave it to your discretion what to spoiler. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. The first thing I see is a little picture of what I think is one of my favorite new actresses. And this is Mia Wasikowska, who most famously of late was Alice in Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland, but who most greatly, as far as I'm concerned so far, was in the first season of the show In Treatment. And she's an actress who just is phenomenal to me. And I just saw her face in a flash, and I immediately thought, Tom, why didn't you just tell me she was in it? And then you watch the short, and she shows up. It's just the way she comes across, and this is really perfect as far as how I feel about Animal Kingdom. She has to do so little to get across what she's feeling. These are actors and these are directors and writers who understand that all you have to do is just be there and we're going to get it, as long as, you know, you're using the right kind of people. And so this is just a great little short. She shows up and that's all I needed to know. And I don't know what else Tom wants to reveal about this, but it's a short that that earns everything in 14 minutes and gives more atmosphere than I see in a lot of full-length feature films.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say it fits into three different genres. And I'm going to say these genres, and I hope they aren't too spoilerized, but in 14 minutes, you get a coming-of-age drama, you get a sort of a family dynamic patricide drama,
that's not a spoiler at all.
And you get a zombie apocalypse.
That's too drunk, John.
Dingus, did you watch Spider, which David Michaud also wrote and Nash Edgerton, who directed The Square, directed? Did you see that one?
Sadly, I did not get around to Spider.
Okay, Spider's nothing great, but Spider is basically a lark, and it is a fantastic one. It's just a joke, and it's a fantastic, fantastic joke. Now, you did see The Square, so Dingus, how would you fit The Square, or would you, in with Animal Kingdom?
I think, you know, you sort of, and this is interesting, I'd like to get into this, but I don't know that we can. The differences you're talking thematically between trust and betrayal, because I think the two of them have to go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And when I'm thinking about the square, I'm just thinking about a movie about trust where nobody trusts anybody. And it also has one of the best just jaw-dropping moments near the end where I just had to say to the television as it was playing, because I saw it on DVD from Netflix, I didn't see that coming. I didn't see that coming. It just shocked me. And another sort of blank character, not as blank as Joshua or Jay, but with that sort of studied, sort of blank, almost taciturn mien. The square has a whole different kind of thing. It's more body heat than Animal Kingdom is. Of course, Animal Kingdom has a different thrust to it. And what I love about seeing, I love Sarah Jane, The Square, and Animal Kingdom is the feeling that these filmmakers really aren't going to be restricted by any genre whatsoever. They're going to be able to do whatever the hell they want.
Well put. Very well put. Yeah. The Square also has dogs in it that do not ruin it.
Is that a 3x3?
I don't know, but Kelly Wand, you should. Someone who thinks that children. Yeah, you'll see Kelly Wand.
No, I'm laughing because a dog moment gave me a 3x3 idea, and I'm a little annoyed that Tom brought it up.
Hey, you know what else has a jaw dropping moment in it? What movie? Mirrors.
Yeah, that would be good, Kelly Wand, if anyone had actually seen that.
It was directed by Aja, your favorite.
I know. Let's please not get into that. I'd rather forget about it.
So, Tom,
through you. But.
So, Tom, what do you want to say about the square? I mean, you're the one who got me to see it. I mean, how do you feel about
it? I really like the way you put it, Dingus, is these guys, this circle of filmmakers, these guys that come together under this blue tongue rubric, whatever, I really like how they bring their own, how they're doing what could be described as just genre films, but bringing their own sort of smart writing and perceptive shooting to them, to these different genres. Animal Kingdom is, I feel, this almost Shakespearean drama about a family. The Square is a more traditional crime gone wrong kind of thing that spins out of control. I Love Sarah Jane is a zombie apocalypse coming of age story. Even Spider is a gag. These guys have done, they have a background actually as stuntmen. And there's one called Lucky, which is just a gag. It's a stunt gag about Nash Edgerton jumping around on a car, you know, during a chase. It's not even a chase scene. It's just a car out of control. These guys are just...
Wait, the production company is composed of stuntmen? Is that what you just said?
They're not a production company, Kelly Wand. It really is. They literally are just like a group of dudes who help each other. You see their names, like there's a fellow named...
Troop.
They're sort of a troupe, but they work for, you know, this picture was produced under a separate company. It was picked up by Sony. The guy who directed The Square, his next movie was just bought by, I forget who, it's called Hesher, which is of Gordon Levitt. So they're working for different people, but they help each other. You know, the Edgerton brothers work regularly with them. The David Michaud is the Animal Kingdom guy. The fella from who directed I Love Sarah Jane and The Square is named Spencer Susser. So the production company isn't Blue Tongue. That's just this what they call themselves as a group, basically. And Nash Edgerton started as a stuntman, actually. You know what? It might be Joel Edgerton. One of the two Edgerton brothers started as a stuntman. That's how he got into the movie industry. And you look at like the guy who edited Animal Kingdom. You know, he does visual effects work on stuff that shoots down in Australia. They're just guys who are getting their foot in the business and doing their own thing with it. And they're competent, they're smart, and I really like what they're doing.
Do they use that musician guy? Score?
You know, that's I loved the music in Animal Kingdom.
Yeah.
It started with this almost overblown operatic bit, which at first I was like, yeah, is this working? And it was a...
But it comes out at such weird moments.
Yeah. It's, well, the whole
awesome
sound, like they had that really eerie, silent SWAT raid early on after the cops are killed. And the choice to do that with no sound was just so effective and brave. I loved that. So the sound design in Animal Kingdom, along with the music, really does deserve special mention. Yeah.
And I don't really notice music much, so for me, it's that's how good the music is.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to look up what else that guy did. Sorry.
Are you Googling?
Well, you know, seems like a good time. You know, no one's listening.
I love the way that SWAT. I'm glad you brought that up because I love the way that SWAT scene is filmed with Jay just walking down the hall, going back to his room, and something's happening in the background, which could be nothing, but it isn't. I mean, it's this, it seems almost incidental the way it begins, and I loved that. I loved how this huge moment in these characters' lives is introduced in this moment of silence.
Yeah, yeah.
I like a lot of reveals that come out in the middle of a scene, like where they're all eating at Denny's and they go, wait, Jay's still at the cops? It's 12 hours, you guys would pick him up. I love that. You just find out, and the scene where you find out they were acquitted is amazing. Because they're sitting on the couch, you know what's going on. There's like somebody, there's a camera on them, and the guy goes, "Yeah, we probably won't use anything. We just shot." It's like an office scene.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the interview kind of thing. Yeah, yeah.
And that's where you find out the trial was over, and they go, "Okay, now you get reacting to the acquittal," and that's the first time you hear that. You're like, what?
"Well, I think you find out." I think you find out before that when Guy Pearce goes into the room with Jay and closes the door and sits down and talks to him. Man,
I thought that was right before he was going to testify. Am I crazy?
Oh, but you know what, Kelly Wand? Because he's packing to leave the room. Dinks
right.
is right. He, that's the room where he's been sequestered or whatever, and he's packing to leave because it's all over. And that's where doesn't he say, or doesn't Guy Pearce say, you found your place or what? There's some,
we don't know what that means yet.
Right, right. There's some intuition at that point that, yeah, that he knows what he's going to do.
And he's really somber and bummed, and you don't know why.
Yeah, yeah.
You go, oh, well, he's just trying to, like, he's just jittery and nervous about his testimony or something.
Well, there's so much going on when he goes in there, because I think you see other cops and you see this air of hostility, and he goes into the room, and then Guy Pearce goes in and closes the door. And this is that whole sort of, he's so naive and principled, and you can tell Guy Pearce is disappointed, but he sits down and talks to him like it's okay, and he has no idea of all the deals that Jay's been making and what is actually right. being going on in the testimony, which makes just imagining the testimony, given the coaching of that girl from earlier, mm-hmm. so much more effective. You just imagine the law and order courtroom thing going on, mm-hmm. and you don't see any of it, thank goodness. But you see them in that room, and it's very clearly disappointment going on, and he's packing his bags, and Guy Pearce is sad, but he's sort of protective of the kid because he doesn't know that the kid has betrayed him and betrayed everybody else.
But he hasn't, in a way. Because if Guy Pearce knew that the kid, that Jay's going to shoot Pope, he'd go, all right, that's totally worth it.
I'm down with that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Good. I could have sworn that the car scene where he gets drawn on is after that scene, but I'm probably completely dumb because you guys both sound really sure.
The car scene where he gets drawn.
It's
driving.
All right.
A similar reveal when Janine says to Pope, "Shouldn't you go back on? Maybe you should go back on medication now." I mean,
I just love your pills.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. I just love a little reveal like that. You know, just drop that in there in a little moment. Her weird, awkward kiss on the lips, you know, the way she's interacting with them. Just so many weird little touches.
She's an amazing creation. She's a completely original. I've never seen a character like that before.
You know what, Kelly Wan? That is such a good point. Because we are, you know, you see so many movies. You get used to all the tropes. You get used to the crime bosses and the Lady Macbeths.
Yeah.
And to have such a unique creation like Janine in this movie. You're absolutely right, Kelly Wan. Yeah.
That's what sucks about the poster. That's why you let off with your irritation about the poster.
Yep.
Like, you don't, because if you think, because Jackie Weaver's on, when you first hear her, it's like she's taught, you hear her voice over the phone consoling him.
Yes, yes.
Oh, are you okay, honey? Like, oh.
And after not even recognizing his name, too, by the way.
Yeah, right. And he seems to.
Do you even know where we live?
That's right, yes, yes.
Of course I do. What a silly thing.
Now, what is it she says at some point about why she lost touch with his mother?
Something about a fight. They got in a drunk fight during cards or something.
But what was it? Oh, yeah, that's right, about the Trump card. Oh, my God.
She says, I was drunk, too, but I was right.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God, that was so awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, what line is this from? What scene is this from? You guys, I'm going to give you a line. You ready? What are you doing that for? What makes you think it's a good idea to do that now?
Doing the line. You know, smoking weed.
Exactly. It's Darren getting stoned before they have to go shoot the cops. I love that. What are you doing that for? What makes you think it's a good idea to do that now?
All right, you guys have brought up Winter's Bone. I'm thinking of something Pope does that makes me think of another great movie we've watched this year.
Something Pope does. Murders a Young Woman? Yeah, Clash of the Titans. Something Pope does. We need a better hint than that.
The tree lets him stay in Avatar mode.
It's one of the very first things he does with Jay's girlfriend.
She's beautiful, isn't she, or something? You laser on the bed?
Oh, yeah, fish tank. Yeah, but except fish tank's way more wholesome. Dingus, you're gross, Dingus.
No, she looks like
because,
a fish tank.
Because he carries her in, and he lays her down on the bed. And I don't want to talk too much about fish tank, but he lays her down in the bed, and then he stands up. And there's that same sort of, what's going to happen right at this moment?
No, you're gross.
And then Jay comes around the corner and looks at him.
He never talks too much about fish tank, first.
And there's this look Pope gives. There's this moment. It's like a millisecond of a moment where you see who he really is and how he's really looking at her. And then Jay comes around the corner. It's a phenomenal moment where for me, it's one of the first moments. It's right after the whole ridiculous Air Supply song that they've sat there.
I mean, awesome Air Supply.
Yeah, exactly. That was not ridiculous. That was awesome.
Well, no, it's ridiculous because, you know, you're listening to the song, but he's looking at her in a certain way and looking at him. He's looking at her and he's looking at the screen. And there's something going on in him.
Well, by the way, that's another reveal, Dingus, is you see them watching TV, and it's only as the camera swings around that you see what he's looking at. So you're right. That's,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And when he carries her to bed, there's that sense of, is this going to be paternal or not? And
oh, good Lord, I didn't think so. After looking that way while listening to Air Supply.
And for Dingus to think that, that means it was definitely intentional. Because Dingus doesn't go there accidentally.
I never thought he was anything less than
Tom's just gay.
anything less than what, Tom?
Non-wholesome.
Non-wholesome. All
what?
Right.
Yeah. He's never wholesome. What are you talking about?
Non-wholesome.
Dingus is like, yeah, this guy's a creep.
That's what I'm saying, is I always thought he was a creep. I didn't think there was anything paternal with the way he was looking at Jay's girlfriend.
So you'd already written him off as a creep.
Yes.
But when
he comes in, I mean, he's just so weird. I mean, and they talk. I mean, like I said, they lay so much groundwork. That's still a good comparison, Dingus, even though I think it's really unfair to poor Michael Fassbender. That's a good comparison.
Dingus, you're right, though, because they photograph her kind of sexually for that scene, which you're supposed to.
Now, who did you guys – so obviously the one brother looks like Russell Crowe. He looks like an Australian Russell Crowe. Who did Ben Mendelsohn look like to you guys as Pope?
Bill Howard.
No. Dingus, anyone for you? Dingus, you guys probably wouldn't get this. To me, he looked just like Joel Hodgson, the fellow from Mystery Science Theater 3000. Y'all didn't get that?
This is your Veronica Cartwright.
Which I won that one, by the way.
How did you win that one?
I posted photographic evidence that
one guy out of 9 million didn't laugh at you. That's what I remember.
You so don't know. You know what? Go to the thread. There's pictures of young Portia, whatever her name was, and Veronica Cartwright. They're identical. They're doppelgangers, I tell you. Doppelgangers.
I can't understand. It's too thick.
He really reminds me of a comedian named Jeffrey Ross, I think. Yeah, Jeffrey Ross. And Jeffrey Ross is a comedian who's well known for doing roasts. And he's sort of a comedian's comedian. And the guy who plays Pope, for me, is a dead ringer for Jeffrey Ross.
Do you go to a lot of roasts, Dingus?
I'm all the time. I love stand-up comedy. I do a lot of stand-up comedy. I mean, who doesn't? But I just know this guy from watching various shows. And he,
really?
For me, as soon as I saw Pope, I thought, is that Jeffrey Ross? Does he do? No, he's not an actor. He
looks
can't
like
be
the guy from Scanners to me.
Michael Ironsides?
Oh. The inert protagonist.
All right.
What I loved about him was this thing he kept doing of this talk to me thing he kept doing.
God, yes.
This was so creepy and awesome.
Are you gay?
Which you first did. Who was that brother? Is that Darren?
Darren. Are you gay?
Yeah. Well, what are you drinking?
Bourbon and Coke.
It's a gay drink.
Not a very gay drink.
That's right. No, that's not a very gay drink. That's right.
And then
he does
the same shtick with Jay, where he asks Jay to open up to him. You can talk to me, where he's trying to be the patriarch of the family. He's trying to say, you can talk to me, open up to me. But clearly, there's something off about him. And then he does it with Nikki, the girlfriend, talking to
me. Oh, that's right, yeah. Oh, God.
He's got this thing that he does where talk to me.
Talk to the cops.
Hey, Kelly Wand.
OJ's a patriarch.
That's such a disturbing killing. God, that's such a disturbing killing.
Yeah, that's one of the ones you see coming. That one and the cops in the car. When they're like going through the glove compartment super slow, and you're like, oh, they're going to get shot.
Oh, well, you know that one's coming, though. Well, I guess you kind of
know her.
You
know her? Because you know from
You don't know what's going to happen. Darren's going to stop him.
Darren's never stopped him. Darren's passive. He's been set up as passive in every scene.
Are you saying because he's gay? How dare you?
That's not a gay haircut.
Kelly Wand, are you gay?
Well, if you just suck one penis, you're not
gay. No, whoa, whoa!
1, 2, 3, not only you and me, got 180 degrees, and I'm caught in between, counting 1, 2, 3, beat up on the free, getting down with 3 feet, everybody loves
old. Saved by Britney Spears.
I meant it a time, by the way.
Freak.
I know. You had that queued up no matter what I said.
That's true.
Good thing I'm gay. Wait.
Kelly Wan, what is this week's 3x3?
I apologize. Okay, I know my last 9 topics have really sucked, and this one's kind of the worst one. But 3 weeks from now, I have a really awesome one. I know I've been wrong every other time I've said that, but the next one's going to be so much better than this crappy one.
I feel like I'm listening to people talk about the Iraq War. Just give us 6 more months.
No, the Iraq War ended. Did you see? We're only going to leave 100,000 troops. So. Good news is it's over. The bad news is we're going to increase the troop count. Wait, what are we talking about? Okay, 3x3, 3 movies that should have been in 3D that weren't, which I can't imagine being interesting to anyone.
Did you just Google what this week's 3x3 is?
No, I was looking at my list and shaking my head dubiously, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is still going. But yeah, Tom, you still hate this 3x3? Because you whined about it midweek.
I did, didn't I? That's right.
The worst one, even for you.
That's right. We normally don't talk about this during the week, so we don't want to tip our hand. And I actually did feel compelled to say something, didn't I?
When does that ever happen?
Well, Dingus will be introducing next week's 3x3, so he gets to go first with.
I can't wait to hear what Dingus thought of this talk.
2D movies that should be 3D. Is that you actually said it better? What did you say, Kelly Wand?
I did.
Well, how did you put it?
Three 2D movies that should have been in 3D.
I'm just going to go movies that should have been in 3D.
Right. Forget the 3 part and forget the 3D part. Just put D.
Movies that should have been in D. Hey, wait a minute.
Best movies, infinite number, that should have been in blank D.
All right. So, Dingus, you get to start us off. I'm pretty excited about this.
Yeah.
What's the category again?
3 best scenes about dogs.
Okay, good. Say what you hear, Tom.
Which he stole from you. He said. He's like, oh, dogs. Oh, Tom, you totally ruined my dog choice from 6 weeks from now. I'm done.
All right, I'm going to give you a quote for my number 3 movie that should have been 3D, but was actually in 2D, but should have been in 3D.
All right. I'm ready for this. I got a good feeling that I'm going to get this one. Go.
Okay, here we go. Will there be boobies?
I know this.
Piranha?
Superbad?
Did you say piranha?
Yeah, isn't there a booby line in that?
There's plenty of booby lines.
I know this line. Oh, rats. What's the name of the movie, Angus?
Okay, I'm going to give you the name of the movie, but you can't guess it. Ready? It's King Kong.
When does somebody say that in King Kong?
He's joking.
Oh.
No one says it. Although King Kong does have nipples, so it's not the craziest thing.
It does? The ape's nipples?
Yeah. And so does Batman.
Good point. Very good point. All right.
Joel Schumacher's allowed.
So Dingus, no one believes you.
Or, yeah.
It is from King Kong. It's when they're in the screening room at the beginning. And
oh, my God. It is from King Kong, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. And you feel this should be in 3D?
Well, I'm just trying to think of, for my third slot, I tried to think of this for all 3, but it didn't work out. But for my third slot, I was trying to think of a film that might be sort of repaired or helped somewhat along by being 3D. And, Kelly Wan said something so odd as he laid down the category last week. He said, you can choose 3 films or nothing, and that could be your category. And
I did.
Yeah, I
said you can choose nothing, and you picked King Kong.
Well, I thought you were trying to help me because I hate 3D so much, but
everyone
anyway.
Hates it. It's not just you. We all hate 3D.
So and I went with a film for my number 3 that I felt could benefit from it because it's not too dark and it's not all underwater, which are 2 things that can tend to work against 3D if it's too dark or too underwater. And so I went with King Kong because the idea of all those dinosaurs and giant bugs and him on the skyscraper. So that's really all I got for number 3.
Yeah, right, Pete Jackson's never done a 3D movie. So I think you're right. But maybe that's more reflection on his intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's the 2005 King Kong directed by Peter Jackson. There you go.
All right. Good.
I still don't remember that quote. I think you're making it up. Who says there will be boobies?
It's one of the studio guys when
no, nobody says there will be boobies as if it were a Paul Anderson film.
Oh.
That, by the way, was the alternate title for Piranha 3D.
Mm. Remember that sound cue and There Will Be Blood at the beginning, that spooky noise? That
Johnny little... Greenwood, the fella from Radiohead, did the music for that. Yeah.
Picture that music, but you're panning up to boobies.
God.
And then it ends. Never mind. There's my number one.
Yeah. And there it ends. Dot, dot, dot.
Kelly, when I almost took you up on your offer to just pick nothing, because I literally can think of no movies that are in 2D that I think should be in 3D, even when 3D is done well, as in How to Train Your Dragon. I don't feel that it's necessary, and the best I can say about the 3D and How to Train Your Dragon is that some of the shots looked like they were made for 3D, and it didn't ruin other parts of the movie. You know, I saw Up in 3D. Looked fine, yeah. Looked great, it didn't ruin the movie, that's the best I can do. If Up had been in 2D, I would have been fine with it. At this point, I just have no desire to see movies in 3D. So I almost, Kelly Wan, took you up on your offer to list nothing. But instead, I'm going to pick movies that I hate so that I will want to see them even less if they're in 3D. So my number three pick is Spanglish. I think Spanglish should be in 3D.
You're that's just shitting all over this list, aren't you?
I could have picked nothing. Would you have rather me pick nothing?
So you're basically picking your three least favorite movies.
I'm picking two movies
and then
today.
Going, yeah, 3D wouldn't have mattered because I'd still hate it.
Right. I would hate it even more. It would give me even more cause to hate
so
it.
So it's really just your least three favorite movies.
And I'm sure there's some movies I hate less than or more than Spanglish.
No, there's not.
Really? Yeah, you might
no.
be right.
You're leading off with your least favorite movie of all time, so I can't wait to hear where you go from here. If this is the theme of your whole three.
You're kind of spoiling my list now. You're giving it away.
Movies Tom hates. Spanglish.
But I didn't want to just leave with three empty spaces. I just would have felt remiss.
So you went with Spanglish, because that's the rich man's nothing.
Number three, yeah. Because imagine, come on.
I'm upset you didn't do a quote from Spanglish.
Imagine that sex scene in 3D.
Exactly.
That's what I was looking forward to. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I take it all back. This has everything to do with 3D.
All right. So
trying. What'd she say when she beats her at the impromptu jogging race?
Oh, that's right. What the, on the right. On the right.
Yeah.
She says, yeah. Kelly Wand,
what a satisfying ending.
Yeah. Right. How about that? What is your number three, Kelly Wand?
Did you get laid out of that movie?
Spanglish? Yeah. First of all, I'm not going to talk about that on the podcast. And second of all, no. All right. How does that work?
Because it wouldn't even be worth it then.
I'm
trying to think, like, okay, sex right. with Jim Arden, but you have to watch Spanglish. Oh, that'd be a bad example. But anyway.
That's a 3x3 topic right there. What three movies would you watch if...
There was sex with Jim Arden involved?
Who's Jim Arden?
Jim Arden? I'm sorry, my accent's too...
Are you doing Australian again?
Wow,
yeah.
Jim Arden, he must be...
Jim Arden.
All right, Kelly Wan, what is your number three movie that should have been in 3D?
That Australian girl on the plane, she didn't understand her money because there's no, none of her coins say how much money it is. Like, it doesn't say what on a dime, like it's 10 cents anywhere.
That's not true.
Yeah. She's like, what?
Wait a minute. Our money does not say how much it's worth?
It doesn't say how many dollars. Like, the coins don't say.
Come on. A quarter's got to have something on it about how much it's worth. Are you serious?
A quarter says quarter dollar, but the dime. She was really puzzled by the dime.
I'm looking this up. I don't believe you.
Are you rolling your 20-sided
dice? That's how I flirted with her. The end.
All right, well, what is that? And,
what is that clattering?
That's me looking for a dime. And how does this feed into your number three
nothing.
Movie that should be in 3D?
It had nothing to do even with what we were talking about.
Oh.
It's just we saw an Australian movie. And
a quarter dollar.
All right, here's my quote from the movie that has nothing to do with what I just said.
Mm-hmm.
For 3D. Wait a minute. They can't. Wait, I screwed it up.
Do the accent, Kelly Wonder.
But I don't want to be miniaturized. It's just for an hour.
Oh, Fantastic Voyage.
Yeah.
Because I saw that recently.
You did?
Yeah.
It's awesome, huh?
No, I don't think it holds up.
Shut up.
Oh, okay.
What about how the antibodies attack only Raquel Welch, so they have to take her suit off of her?
Yeah, the first
Thanks,
time they shot
that...
Yeah, no, that scene, the first time they shot that, everybody was real polite about not pulling antibodies from her chestal region. So the director had to tell them, you know what, guys, don't be shy. So, by the way, Kelly Wan,
wait,
did
is that
dime?
Just...
No, that's true. That's in the director's commentary. By the way, a dime, it does say one dime. So it's I
yeah, but she doesn't know what that means.
It means a tenth of a dollar, duh.
It means a tenth of an ounce.
It means 10 years in prison is what it means.
That's right. Nobody wants to drop a dime on
it. If you have a card.
All right, Fantastic Voyage. That's actually a good one. You're actually taking this list seriously, Kelly Wand. I like that.
My number two is the only good one. But wait, I was going to say about Fantastic Voyage. Something that's kind of cool about Fantastic Voyage, that Star Wars was the first movie to kind of junk this quality, is characters showing awe about something they were looking at. Like in Fantastic Voyage, they kind of seem to care that they're in this dude's body and the brain and the heart. Maybe I'm misremembering it, just adding it to my...
That's no lung.
But remember in Alien and in The Thing? That's pretty good.
Thank you.
That's no
it
screen.
Was a lot. Oh, that would have been good. Mr. What's the Chris Rock Fairley Brothers thing with Bill Murray? Osmosis Jones.
Osmosis Jones. Oh.
The rich man's nothingness. But when they dissect Alien and Alien and in The Thing, like they actually look like they care with they're like fascinated by this like piece of.
Now, Kelly Wand, I thought that Christopher Lloyd showed plenty of fascination towards the piranha in Piranha 3D.
No.
No? Okay.
It was CG, so he couldn't react to it.
Ah.
Alien, they're all like, what? Did some dude in the prop department make this thing? What the hell is it?
You're pining for the days of practical special effects with Rob Bottin, aren't you?
Yeah, in 2D. Yeah, Rob Bottin. Good work. Thank you for saying Rob Bottin.
I'm a Rob Bottin apologist.
So you don't like Fantastic Voyage? Come on, the characterization. There's the dick.
You know what? I did.
There's the other guy.
I recall it. It's mainly a matter of all those, like, wasn't there some French designer who did all the sets with, like, fabric? And it just looked really cheesy to me. I mean, it looked artistic, and, like, obviously it was done with love, but ultimately a little silly. You know, I love Andromeda Strain. I watched Andromeda Strain and Fantastic Voyage at about roughly the same time and thought the movie of Andromeda Strain was such a I guess they're different, but they're both these kind of sci-fi, like science drama thing, like supposedly hard science kind of sci-fi movies. Fantastic Voyage just didn't work for me as well.
No, it's
but I love that Andromeda Strain, by the way.
Too many people live in it. That's my complaint with Andromeda Strain.
Okay, you just want everyone to die. Well, only one person.
Is that a plague?
Doesn't only one person die in Fantastic Voyage?
Yeah, it's kind of lame.
All right, well, so I just wasted you on your own petard, Kelly Wand.
It feels good. See, I started to say hurt.
I know. I saw. Caught you there. Dingus, have you seen Fantastic Voyage recently?
No.
All right.
Ever?
No. No.
Really?
I saw Inner Space. Does that count?
Good enough. It'll do in a bind.
I kind of like Inner Space. I'm an Inner Space apologist. Because it gets really weird when he changes his face or something. Isn't that kind of trippy? He turns into another dude.
Gosh, yeah, I don't remember that at all.
A cowboy. Remember that character?
Played by?
Some guy.
Mark Short? Okay.
Tommy Lee Jones? No. It's some random guy that just shows up in the movie. And then Dennis Quaid uses his ship somehow to change Martin Short's bone structure facially, using, like, Joe Dante-esque.
You know what, Kelly Wan? Maybe Fantastic Voyage isn't that bad.
See? What I did there?
All right, Dingus, what is your number two movie that should have been in 3D?
This is going poorly, I agree.
is going poorly. All right, number two movie that should have been in 3D. Here's a quote for you, fellas.
All right.
Bad news. The fog's getting thicker.
The fog. The mist.
King Kong again?
All three are King Kong.
Bad news. The fog's getting thicker. See, the bad news part's throwing me. Because who the hell says bad news?
Bad news bears.
Ah.
All right, just think of what line you might say next, if I said, the fog's getting thicker.
And Leon.
Oh, and Leon.
Getting larger.
Thank you, Kelly Wand. Damn. And Leon's getting larger. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Airplane.
You said it right. Oh, that would be a 3D movie. I agree with you. I like your choice.
All right, so Piranha 3D gave me a hankering for a 3D spoof. Because I think Piranha 3D, or at least my theory is that that's slightly what Aja is going for, but not, you know, he can't go all the way there. But that's just my weird, perverted take on the movie. And what it gave me a hankering for was a group of filmmakers who could really take 3D right now and totally goof on it and get us over this ridiculous thing that we're into with 3D right now.
Sort of like one last hurrah. Just
so the Wayans brothers making 3D movie instead of scary movie.
Oh, right. Ouch. That's probably going to happen.
Yeah,
except for really talented filmmakers like the Zuckers. And so I would just go back to the Airplane guys. And you're not going to really improve Airplane, I don't think, because, you know, there's so many films of that film. I have so many films of that film, so many fans of that film, that they're going to get annoyed at the idea that anybody should change anything about it. But if you think about the number of things those guys could do with 3D gags, I think that you could really make a hilarious 3D film.
Not now, though, because now they're old and lame.
Well, maybe, but
comedy's a young man's game. That's my theory.
Yeah, just go see Vampires Suck for an example of comedy being a young
man. Those guys were never good, though. You have to have at least had a heyday. Zuckers were awesome back in the day.
All right.
Vicky Pryde movie's funny, too. And stop bleeding at Jim Abrahams. Bastards.
But if I could go back and just say, hey, could you guys tinker with this? But it's not even going – it's just – I didn't know how to sort of think of this as – adapting the film or going back and remaking it, or if it had been originally made as a 3D film. But if you imagine Airplane originally made as a 3D film right now and those guys making all those goofs on it,
yeah, I get it.
I think you could do it. Plus, there's breasts.
Boobies?
Wow, that's a theme for Dingus so far.
Yeah.
It is too. All right. My number two is Crash. All right.
Which one? The Cronenberg?
Please.
dude, you're just going to do three. All right.
What?
You are such a spoil sport.
I almost messed with Crash. I was so close to messing with that. That's great.
I literally feel that no movie that's in 2D should be in 3D. So this is what I'm doing. Any movie that I have no desire to see, that I want to see even less, that
you
I need...
suck it, Kelly Wan. You just... Catch 22s are too obvious.
I'm telling you, they should make Crash in 3D, and I would be totally okay with that. I want it to be made in 3D.
The only part that would be good is the actual crash.
The one we don't see before the movie?
Yeah.
That we, where
and it's not in the
crash into each other so we feel things? Oh, okay.
Oh, racist.
Okay, what is your number two
also
movie?
Also, the gunshot, the Ryan Felipe. I'm sure that's how you say it.
I think the snow at the end would have been lovely in 3D.
Ah, nice. Nice.
Well incepted. Wait.
You're welcome.
Okay, and what is your number two movie that should have been in 3D?
I want to reiterate that you really suck. And I'm going
to... I'm not the one that came up with this list. I'm just using it for my own purposes.
I'm very disappointed.
You gave me the tools.
Very
I am applying them where I feel they should be best applied.
You could have just... All right.
I could have left it blank, but instead, I am coming in. I vote for Crash 3D and Spanglish 3D.
So we have to figure out what you hate even than those. Which I'm a little stumped on, because I was really...
All right. Well, what's your number two? Since you and Dingus are actually doing the list for serious, what's your number two?
Dingus's list is great.
I know.
A comedy 3D movie? That's a great idea.
I wouldn't go see it, but sure, yeah, it's a great idea.
I would if it was 1980 and Zuckers. I would see it.
Right.
So basically never, and that's kind of what this list is. Stuff that would never happen. In fact, that leads right into my number two. I will do a quote. The neck's broken. The brain is useless. We must find another brain.
Reanimator.
That'd be
Young Frankenstein.
Close. You're terrible.
What movie do they look for brains in besides those two?
Old Frankenstein.
Oh, the original Frankenstein?
Yeah.
Oh.
But you see, here's what I'm doing, what Dingus is doing. I'm going back in time and pretending it's 1931 and it's black and white. And you go into Frankenstein, it's not just black and white, but it's 3D. And it's like about new life and new technology. Wait, can I change it? Okay. Trip to the Moon. Remember that one with the bullet in the eye?
Ah, that's right.
If that was in 3D... and silent and black and white.
So last year, at the end of the summer last year, at the Hollywood Cemetery, they had a screening, this would have been so perfect, of Night of the Living Dead in 3D. And I'm assuming it was just one of the chintzy little things with the red and with the red and blue glasses. Well, yeah, of course, the original, yeah. And I'm thinking that would be, I might have to use that for my number one pick.
How did it look?
I didn't go, unfortunately, because that would have been the perfect setting to see that movie. So I don't, you know what, I might use that for my number one, so pretend I didn't say anything.
Because black and white, you can't do in 3D.
Is that true? Oh, well, you can't with the red and, you're right, with the red and blue glasses. Well, actually, is that true? Can't you just, like, tint it or something? I don't know.
There's never been an effort at it, which is why I picked Frankenstein.
So you're doing, like, a whole, like, Kennedy wanting to go to the moon. Like, you're doing it not
I don't
because...
see, I didn't know there's going to be math.
All right, that's a good one, Kelly Wand. All right, Dingus, so what is your number one, even more so than King Kong or Airplane, what movie do you feel should be in 3D?
All right, here's a quote, ladies and gentlemen. I'll bet someone back east is going, now why don't he write?
The heck, I'm Driving Miss Daisy?
That would be great in 3D, Dom. Yeah.
What the heck kind of accent was that anyway?
I don't know.
Do it again?
Yeah, do it again. Do the accent better this time.
Because I can't rewind because I'm stuck here doing this thing live.
I'll bet somebody back east is going, now why don't he write?
Barton Fink?
The actor who says it is named Robert Pastorelli. Do you know
I don't even know who that is.
Murphy Brown?
Yeah, good, very good, Kelly Wand.
The movie?
It's not the Murphy Brown movie.
Oh,
no.
Bullets Over Broadway?
No. It's from a little movie called Dances with Wolves.
Wow. Yikes.
All
right. Okay, on that note.
Ooh.
So you're doing a Tom.
What is he doing? I don't know what he's doing. Dingus, you're going to have to explain yourself. Why don't...
Who says that in that dumb movie? I mean, awesome Goodfellas Peter, best picture.
It's a great moment from the beginning of the movie. Well, not the beginning, from the first two-thirds.
Ride or right?
Right. They come upon a guy who's a body who's been killed. You know, when Robert Pastorelli is tasked with taking Kevin Costner out to this outpost, and in one of their first camps, they find this body of this guy, and Kevin Costner's all emotional about it and writing in his journal, and Robert Pastorelli says, "Why don't he write?" He's just joking about it and laughing about it. So anyway, there's a reason I chose Dances with Wolves for this. If you care to listen to me,
I can guess it. Can I guess it, or do you want to go ahead?
No, go ahead, Tom.
I'm guessing because you liked Avatar so much, and Avatar is basically a retelling of Dances with Wolves. You would like to see the original intent of Dances of Avatar.
And James Cameron can't write either.
Yeah. Am I close? Is it something like that?
That has nothing to do with it, but it might be the subconscious of it. So you might have just sussed it out. You might have ferreted me just then.
I ferreted you. All right. Well, go ahead. So,
well, I'm just thinking of the last two films I really liked in 3D, and that would be Piranha 3D and How to Train Your Dragon. And I'm thinking of two shots, one shot from each of those films that I really, really liked, and they weren't the gotcha shots. They were incidental shots, really. And I mentioned this on the Piranha 3D podcast, and this isn't a spoiler in any way. It's just a shot of a couple of characters riding off in a boat on a lake and the Arizona mountains in the background, and it's just a beautifully layered, long shot that really, I think, showcases 3D without showcasing the gimmick of 3D. And the shot I'm thinking of from How to Train Your Dragon, which I loved that film, and as Tom has mentioned before, made me sort of feel like, okay, I'm okay with 3D because I hate it. I hate 3D right now. But How to Train Your Dragon kind of swayed me a little bit. And there's this one lovely shot where Hiccup, the main character, is tracking the knight, what's the kind of dragon? I can't remember the dragon that he's tracking all of a sudden, the Night Terror or something like that. Night Fury. He's tracking him through the forest. And there's this beautiful long shot of him sort of almost in silhouette as he's tracking this dragon through the forest. And you see him, and it's sort of a misty shot of the forest, but it's such a deep shot. And in 3D, you get such a sense of the depth of him tracking in this forest and the depth of the forest, and I really loved that. And those are two shots that I really love of the last couple of films that I loved in 3D, when I really can't stand 3D. And so I was thinking about different films that might benefit from this and films that could use help. So I'm thinking of like big films with a lot of scope to them, classic films that I really love but don't need any help. And Dances with Wolves, which isn't a great film, I don't think, but which is one that I like, sort of, I think could benefit from a gimmick like 3D. There's a lot of the film that takes place in flat plains, and I think that 3D could layer that and could make that have more dimension. And when you get to the mountains at the end of the film, that could be a stark contrast. And in particular, when you have the whole slaughter of the buffalo and those shots, those that might be helped by sort of the expansion of the dimension with 3D. And plus, there's a lot of arrows. So
all right, Dingus, all I can say is that when they remake Dances with Wolves in 3D, I hope that when you go to see it, you get broken glasses.
Thank you.
Battery-powered.
My number one film that's in 2D that I feel should have been in 3D is Francois Truffaut's Jules and Jim. All right, Kelly Warren, what's your number one?
You don't like that movie?
No, I can't stand it. It's insufferable.
Like it,
have you seen? Yeah, nobody who likes Jules and Jim could.
Because the chick's kind of a bitch. It's one of those movies where you just go, why don't you just find some other lover? Problem solved.
Yeah, who?
For each other.
I think that's one of those movies that people have been tricked into thinking is good.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So, it should be in 3D. There you go.
It's like The Who.
I'm with you there, brother.
The Who's overrated.
There's
no Air Supply. That's what I learned.
All right, Kelly Wan, what is the number one movie that should have been in 3D?
My number one movie is Career Opportunities. JK.
Oh, you jerk.
I
like that pick. You almost salvaged
it. All right, I'll go with it then.
No, what's your other number one?
No, that's what it is.
I don't believe you. What did you have written down on your piece of paper there?
Well, I wrote a bunch of different things.
And so, when you were just going to decide when you got to the end which one you were going to plug into the number one?
I forgot I put Trip to the Moon for 2 and 1, so now I have to pick a new one unless I go twice with Trip to the Moon. So I'm going to have to say Career Opportunities.
Now, are you saying that just because I've been looking for a copy of Career Opportunities recently?
What? I don't really know what you're talking about.
All right. Okay.
No, the horse.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Ugh.
My favorite thing about Career Opportunities is Dylan McDermott as the bad guy. He's so good in that.
Who?
Sorry, Dermot Mulroney. One of those guys.
Dermot McDroney.
All right, runners up. Anyone? Did anyone have runners up? Dingus, you must have had some, because you actually put thought into this one.
My choices were so denigrated, I'm not even going to give you my runners up. So
sorry. Denigrated.
So when you guys were talking, actually, I thought of one that kind of fits in with Dingus's airplane thing, that if I were doing this list in earnest, here's what I would pick. And it's
Ernest Goes to Camp.
So it's kind of a runner-up. Planet Terror, the Robert Rodriguez, that awesome, his awesome love letter to crappy 80s horror films.
That's retro, too, so it would have helped it.
Yeah, I love that movie. I mean, that movie's so just affectionate. And so you know what? As long as it takes into, you know, for me, the most important thing about 3D is do no harm. And if it can handle that, then I think that should have been in 3D. So that's one of my runners up.
Do no harm.
Yeah. 3D screws up movies.
It's Tom's.
So it's like a dog. Right.
Hippocratic 3D.
That's right.
My runners up were Zardoz, The Penis is Evil. Remember? Tom's favorite thing.
I've never seen. I don't know. That's early John Borman, isn't it?
Well, it's post-Deliverance, so it can't be that early.
John Borman did Deliverance, and then he did a cheesy sci-fi thing with Sean Connery. Then he did Zardoz.
Somewhere in there is Exorcist 2, The Heretic. I forget whether it's before.
But that's not his. That's no Zardoz. Exorcist 2, The Heretic.
Nothing's Zardoz.
Cool. Actually, you know what? No, it doesn't. That's the one with Richard Burton. Exorcist 3 is the one with Brad Dourif that isn't awful. Exorcist 2 is the awful one. That's right.
Yeah, Exorcist 3 rules, actually. I was trying to convince an old man. He was like, yeah, Last Exorcism this weekend. Which, by the way, was the number one movie. Now I feel
Yeah, wrong. How about that? Yep.
I kind of want to see it now.
Fortunately, I'm gonna pick Zulu then.
Getting back to my runners-up, Saving Private Ryan.
Ah.
Huh?
Good, good.
The Great Train Robbery, the 1901 one, which I guess was a little derivative of Trip to the Moon. But wasn't that the movie where audiences freaked out when the train came at them and they shoot the gun at the screen?
You're thinking of A-Team.
Can you imagine if it was in 3D and it was coming at them?
You're thinking of A-Team, Kelly Wand.
And also Wizard of Oz, but once she gets to Oz, it goes to 3D and color. And Avatar. Okay.
All right.
Yeah, pretty interesting.
So, Dingus, that's a tough act to follow. How are you going to beat a 3x3 that's like that? What do you got for us for next week?
Wait, Tom, what were your runners up? Or was that just...
Planet Terror.
Oh.
Robert Rodriguez's Planet Terror.
You had one runner-ups.
Right.
Okay.
Matter of fact, can I just list that one three times instead of Spanglish Crash and Jules and Jim?
What was my number one again? I can't remember.
Your number one was Career Opportunities.
Oh. Back to Dingus. Thank you. Make sure. Ledgers.
Did we lose Dingus?
No, I'm still here. I'm just waiting for... All right, so here we go. Next week's 3x3. This is definitely inspired by this week's film.
Uh-oh.
And this is something Tom almost ruined for me a few weeks ago with his 3x3, but this is a different category. And so this is your best... opening credit sequence.
Oh,
I wondered which one of us was going to do that first. I mean, I know it's something we probably all consider.
Damn.
And it's like Dingus blinked first. Ha ha.
Well, I had to blink. This film made me blink. So your best opening credit sequence. And when I first thought of this, it was best opening credit sequence for a film that is then total crap. But
Panic Room.
Yeah. In Panic Room is exactly the one I was thinking of, you jerk. Will you stop that? This whole podcast.
All right, so Panic Room's off the table, I guess.
All right, yeah, but this isn't necessarily that, because the film we saw this week has such a great opening credit sequence, and it plays so well into the things that I loved about the film. And a great opening credit sequence can understand how to do that. Now, it doesn't have to be thematic. It can just be artful. And so just your favorite three or your best three opening credit sequences.
All right, good. I like that. Okay. Kelly, you're okay with that one?
Yeah, I just had it down for some more.
I hope that wasn't the awesome one that you were promising us in 3 weeks.
No.
Okay.
That one's good. I had three best credit sequences, like you could use closing credits, too. So Dingus.
Well, that's something else.
There you go. There you go.
Totally different.
All right, good. So that's it. We have it. Next week we will be seeing, speaking of Planet Terror, next week we will be seeing Machete.
Yay!
Rodriguez's next movie. Hopefully it's as good as Spy Kids.
One of my stupid friends called it race baiting, so I'm looking forward to seeing it with him.
Ah, good. Well, we'll have a hearty political discussion maybe as well. Join us for a discussion of Machete and our 3x3 of the best opening credits sequences. I am Tom Chick. You have been listening to the Quarter 3 Movie Podcast. I'm here with Christian Mira, I think Mira Sky. Christian Mira Sky.
I like that better than my own name, which is Christian Murawski.
I was close. And Kelly Wand.
Animal Kingdom sounds sexist.
Go to a lake of fire and fly. See him again. Double.
the aristocrats,